Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 239 for September 23rd, 2019. And we are recording this at just after 1 p.m. Eastern time. Today, we will be discussing the 313th weekly report from Timing Research. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports and you can follow along with us. Also, just a reminder, this is an audio-only episode, but it will be posted to YouTube and all the podcast networks as usual. Today, I have arranged for Norman Hallett, Mark Sachs, Michael Guess, and Jim Kenny to join us. And Jim will be moderating. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, great, David. Thank you very much. And welcome to everybody who's listening in. We got a great panel here today. So before we get started on the questions, we're going to go around the horn here and start out with Mark Sachs of RightlineTrading.com. And Mark, a little background on yourself and what's going on over at Rightline.
I'm a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania. My background is in mathematical modeling, and develop systems based on looking at each individual market as a closed system, defining the forces that are operational in moving price in that closed system, and essentially that's how we trade. We're about to launch a new auto trader, but we have a live trading room every morning, and we're going to be trading this afternoon, and that's about the lowdown.
Sure. Well, we're going to get deeper behind the curtain as far as what you're doing as we get into the broadcast and at the end, so people have a better understanding of how your software, how your approach actually works. So we'll go into that a little further. But sure. Next up is going to be Norm Hallett, and Norm has been in this business for a very long time and has a lot of experience. So, Norm, a little background on yourself and thedisciplinetrader.com.
Yeah, be careful with that long time. Yes, thedisciplinetrader.com. I concentrate, and my firm concentrates on the mental and emotional issues of trading, the underappreciated but never overemphasized area that is probably responsible for most traders not having the success they want. And that's my area. I listened to Mark talking about using mathematical modeling as degrees in math. I have a degree from the University of Cincinnati in math, but I barely got out of there. So
you're a bear cat anyway. You're a bear.
That's right. I am a bear cat, and we did get smushed a couple of weeks ago, but we did come back and got the bell. But in any event, I'm about the mental and emotional issues. In fact, we've just started. We'll be starting in a couple of weeks, but you can ask questions about it now if you'd like. Doing some one-on-one coaching now, high-end coaching for people with larger accounts that really want to get out of their own way. So I'll talk a little bit more about that later.
Yeah, and that seems to be a pretty big thing, because I see Ken Fisher on the ads talking about how one of the downsides of people when they're trying to manage their money is being their worst enemy. And mm-hmm. also TD Ameritrade has some guy on a couch talking to the guy with the beard about how he analyzes things 19,000 ways and then doesn't pull the trigger. So there's a lot of psychological stuff when you're trying to buy and sell with money. And I think that's what you're basically trying to help people with, right?
That's correct. Speaking of psychological, yeah. I think Michael's next, right?
Yeah. Yes, Michael Guess. And he, of course, of daytradesafe.com. And he's already warned us that his approach does put out some sounds while he's speaking sometimes. So if you hear some type of activity in the background, it's his system telling him about something or other. And so, Michael, without further ado, a little background on yourself and also on daytradesafe.com.
Hey, thanks to all of you and, of course, to David. I couldn't agree more with what Norm has said about the importance of discipline in trading. That was my background also in a prior life before I became a professional day trader about 25 years ago. But I quickly discovered that even though people can certainly work, and they should, on trading psychology, if you do not have a true system, a Boolean logic, rules-based approach, preferably embedded in software, then you're going to be basically trading a discretionary approach, and you will lack what I think the holy grail of consistency is. And there you heard that alert in the background. That's my system talking to me and telling me about a new change of trend on a particular market or chart. But yes, discretionary trading, you can beat it with a true system. And I'm happy to answer more questions about that if you folks want to get in touch with me. Daytradesafe.com is the website. Go ahead and log in. You'll get a free ebook in the process. Other than that, let's get started.
Sure. I'm with you all the way. And you guys all have, you know, a lot of, depth to what you're doing. So we're going to try to get a little deeper into that stuff as we go along. But first, we're going to start out with the questions of the week. And the first question, as always, is going to be the S&P opened this week at 2983. And where do we think it's going to be going between now and Friday? Up first, Mark Sachs.
If you could just hang on 1 second, I'm just loading my my swing trade software, and I had it on the NQ, unfortunately, but now it's loading really quickly for the E-mini. And is there any way that I can project it?
This is a audio only episode.
Yeah, we're doing audio only for this one, Mark.
But you can project it verbally.
Okay. Well, as far as the E-mini is concerned, I see it as going higher.
Okay, we're going to stop. We're just going to go with the answer. We're going to come back to all your reasonings and stuff. But let's just go really quick with a yay or hey, or, you know, up or down type deal, or no opinion. So your opinion is it looks like it might be rising, eh?
Yes.
Okay. Next up is going to be Norm. And Norm, how do you feel about 2983 between now and Friday?
What happened to last week's third category that we created?
That's right.
Sideways. And it actually worked out pretty well. But this week, I actually think we're going lower.
Okay. And we'll get into all the reasonings behind that one. And right now, we're going to go over to Michael. And Michael, what's your best guess between 2983 and Friday? Michael, I think he muted himself maybe and then did not unmute himself.
Yeah, Michael, I think you're muted.
Sorry about that. I was also trying to flip from one screen to another. Can you hear me now?
Yes,
absolutely.
And thank you for that. I was going to say I'm leaning on my last name guess to make that guess. We've been in a trading range basically for the last week or so. Overall, sure, the market has been higher for weeks and weeks. But unless we break out of that trading range and go above the week's high, I don't think we're going to keep going higher. There is the possibility. Well, okay. You wanted rationale later.
Yeah. We'll get into that. And we do want to get into that. I just want to quickly go through the opinions. So we got Mark is up. We got Norm is down. And Michael, you said it was up?
Trading range.
Trading range. Okay. Well, hey, Norm, we got that sideways thing going again.
Yeah, always one of those guys.
All right. So anyway, let's start with Mark here. And what do you put your probability at? You know, what is your percentage confidence in that type of thing?
I would put it really no greater than 60%.
Okay, about 60%. Norm, what's your percentage confidence in your view?
I'm going a little higher. I'm going to go somewhere in the 65-70% range because I've got two indicators that I believe are showing me the south side.
Sure. And Michael, sideways, let me guess, is it 50-50? Because that's sideways. Ways right now. What's your percentage confidence in that?
Well, how about we say sideways with a percentage of about 60% breaking higher.
Okay. Uh-huh. So it's sideways with the potential of going higher in about 60%. Okay. Now we're going to get into the meat and potatoes as far as what's the reasoning behind it and some of the things you're seeing that would validate your opinion. Mark, how do you support your view?
Some of the forces that we look at to move price, one is we look at correlative markets. And if you look at the correlative markets for the E-mini, which are the Russell, the Dow, and the NASDAQ, they still remain in an uptrend. The second is we do a multi-time frame assessment of momentum using the Laguerre oscillator. And it's still... it's not locked long, but it's still in the overbought area. area, and we don't look for divergence. What we believe is that shows that there's significant, there remains significant buying pressure. The thing that does concern me is that we also have an assessment of volatility, and that volatility assessment is flat. So the market does lack on a swing trade time frame, which is going back about 5 or 6 days, significant volatility, which I think one of my colleagues mentioned that they were looking at a trading range. That's why the probability of my saying an uptrend is only 60%, because the volatility indicator really is quite good. And with volatility flat, and even though we have the other parameters still reading long, I would say there's still, my bias is to the upside, but we can also stay in a trading range because of the lack of volatility.
Right. Okay. And Norm, what's behind the curtain as far as your view that we might be rolling over a bit here?
Well, in keeping with the lack of volatility, something also interesting in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days, and the last 8 trading days, I'm not counting today, I have the last 8 trading days, 6 of those days have been, well, 5 of those days out of the last 7 have been spinners or dojis, meaning that that there doesn't seem to be any confidence in direction when the market closes. In other words, the opening price and the closing price are nearly the same in most of 5 out of the last 7 days, which to me shows, of course, a lack of decision. It doesn't always mean it goes sideways, but it seems to be like the market is waiting for something. The last, on Friday's action, we did, one of the reasons I'm negative is that on Friday's action, we did close at the low of the week. We are below a moving average that I watch that we've breached an 8-bar exponential moving average on the daily chart. And what kind of caps it for me is the second indicator that I like to look at. I think you've had Hema on the show, haven't you, Hema Reddy? She does a lot of work with the RSI. And if the market stays between 55 and 65 in the RSI for a considerable period of time, which it has over the last couple of weeks, this market, that's what she calls a resistance area for a negative market. If a market can't get past that 65 area and stays between 55 and 65, that's a zone where she looks for a breakout to the downside to complete that thought that we're not able to break out on a momentum standpoint. So in other words, we're slightly we have a slight positive momentum being above 50, 55 to 65 in this case, but nothing is happening. And that failure of any use of the momentum usually leads to more downside. So between those two things, I'm looking for, haven't pulled the trigger, but I would be, if you ask the question, I'd look for lower.
Yeah, the difficult part is we have a 2940 resistance that got broken, and so now it's support. And then you've got the 3030 area, which is the all-time high. And so you're very close to either one, and you really just have to guess which one they're going to break. If they break, obviously, one way or the other, the clarity on the direction will be a little bit easier. The RSI that you guys were talking about, relative strength, RSI doesn't seem to really like to stay under 14 if it's going to be a bearish situation. So it's at 15 now, so that's kind of another indicator along with RSI that you could kind of keep a look at. Michael, your gut feeling on and the evidence you would present that sideways or higher might make some sense here.
Well, I am always at a disadvantage when I come on this show because, remember, I'm a day trader, folks.
That's true. That's
I don't true. Look at anything beyond the next 15 to 20 minutes typically. But when I look at cycles from a daily chart on down and I break it down into, for example, a 135-minute chart, you can keep getting smaller and smaller cycles. But I've noticed that the 135 is in congestion. And also our proprietary oscillator that we use as part of our setups for both the daily chart and the 135. On the daily chart, it's almost oversold. On the 135, it is oversold. So the tendency would be to try to lift up. Currently, the market is trading higher, but I would really need to see more than 50% of the trading range exceeded. In other words, get past the midpoint of the trading range for me to have the confidence that we're going to have the follow through to have that 60% certainty that I was assigning to whether or not we're going to get out of the trading range. So that's basically it.
Yeah. And again, you make a great point. Your particular tactic has to do with day trading. So the concept of what's going to happen in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks is really not on your radar as far as the stuff that you bring to the table for the investor.
Right.
I got you. I'm with you all the way. Okay. So we went over the basic direction, the percentage of confidence and the reasons behind it. Now the question is there anything else that you guys are looking at that you think might be very important to keep an eye on? Obviously, the end of the quarter is happening pretty much at the end of this week or so. And then we've got the earnings coming out next month, and China might be coming back to the table and other factors. So, Mark, is there anything on your radar that you're kind of looking at that could be important in the weeks ahead?
The things that I've seen that have created the slightly bullish position that I'm in is that housing starts are way up. The average hourly wage is still pushing up. I know that the number of anticipated new jobs was down, but I think it still shows that the economy is moving forward. I really like the fact, it actually led me to take an options position on Toll Brothers because the number of anticipated new housing starts is really high. And I like that as a proxy for the economy and how much savings people have. Also, their confidence in, moving forward, moving money out of their savings account into a home. It's really the numbers that have given me the basic feeling. Like today in the morning, the market tried to pull back, and right now it's pushed into positive territory, and it still seems to me that buyers are still coming in to buy almost all the dips. And as long as I continue to see that, economic numbers are good, especially consumer confidence. I'm gonna stay in the bullish camp, and along with the technicals, I would be more predisposed to look for a move up than a look down.
Are you looking at D.R. Horton at all? They supposedly specialize in the less expensive home for these guys that are living with their parents. Well, I read something, 70% of 20-year-olds are living with their parents. So that seems like a bunch of people that might want to buy a house, but they might want to buy one for $150, $250, not something in the higher range. And according to what I read, D.R. Horton's kind of in that game.
Well, the reason I like Toll Brothers over D.H. Horton is really just one reason. And that is, I have Options Monster and I have Benzinga, and I look at all the big options crosses that take place every day. It's one of the ways I place my own options trades. And there were, I can't remember if it was Wednesday or Thursday, but there were huge positions crossing on Toll Brothers.
The action was there for a reason. And if you had to pick one or the other, you might as well go where the action is.
Yeah. And they were big, big options trades, way bigger than open interest. And at the bid, which is usually considered a bullish purchase, and so I'm just going to go with where all the big money is going. So that's why I went with Toll Brothers.
Sure. Okay, Norm, anything that you see coming up here? I was watching Bloomberg earlier today, and Jeremy Siegel was on there saying that 40% of the S&P company's revenues come from overseas, so slowdowns overseas could affect their profits. And do you see anything happening there that could be game-changing coming up?
Well, based on what I just heard from Mark, I should have stayed in that math class instead of skipping a couple. But I do see a couple of things. And I know that Jake mentioned this last week. He likes to look at the bonds. Part of me doesn't like to look at other markets when I'm looking at a specific market, to look at the complementary markets. For instance, bonds, in the case of wondering what's going to happen or figuring out your feelings about the S&P. But the bonds have, I'm looking at a series of six green, nicely sized, reasonably sized green candles in a row, taking out or gaining back almost half of the drop from the 167 level down to 157. We're now at 160. Well, we've got over 162 today. So, you know, we're at a critical point in the bonds, but any further up movement there, you know, it starts to get friendly to the short side of the S&P. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that I see in support of the south side. But again, I need to see a little bit more strength, and we need to close you know, strongly today and tomorrow. But you know, Tuesday can be a counter day, especially in the bonds. But mm-hmm. I'd like to see a nice close in the bonds today to make me look for a trigger to the south side of the S&P.
Yeah, I definitely can see where, you know, there's a hesitancy to get too crazy on the buying or sell side, because again, we are meandering through some points here. And if we are going to roll over, would they make a run at the highs to kind of get all the stops cleaned out and then roll it over? That's always something that has to be kind of in your back of your mind, because they came awfully close to making a new high last week, I guess, and then rolled over. So are they going to make another attempt to try to blow out the stops above 30-30 type thing? Mm-hmm. But Michael, anything? I know obviously your scope that you're kind of looking at is day-to-day, but is there a few different things that you kind of are looking at, or that really doesn't come into your game plan?
Oh, I definitely do look outside of the pure technicals, primarily politics these days. Of course, a random tweet can blow up any trade, but it's interesting in the lower respondent answers, right at the top of the list was stagnant market due to, and then it gave a little laundry list of things. You know, it doesn't take too much for anything to cause the market to get the jitters. Of course, a lot of it is trying to nail jelly to a tree. You know, right now with the latest investigation, you know, about whether a phone call to a different country is cause for alarm or not. Well, those things take time. You know, I think that'll blow over. So short term, I don't see stuff like that happening. I'm much more concerned about, you know, sudden things like, you know, we had the attack in Saudi Arabia, and that caused, of course, you know, a big reaction in crude. So I'm more concerned about individual events more than anything. If we don't get them, we may end up treading water. Like I say, I'm still seeing the market basically in a trading range for the time being. Technically, I already gave you my recommendation that if we can get out of oversold on the daily and the 135 minute, then we might see it lift. But to me, the greatest aspiration I would have is if we can cross the 50% threshold of the distance of the trading range that we're in. Then I think we might have enough momentum, all outside things notwithstanding. I think we might have enough momentum to maybe take out the highs. So there
you go. Yeah, I mean, you know, like I say, it's hard to believe that they're going to go right to that high and not take out the stops that might be above there. That would be, you know, the one hesitancy that I would be having about getting too negative in the next week or so. So, but again, those earnings coming out next month, that's no joke. I think when those numbers come out, if they don't confirm that we should be going up, then I think that the risk might be different, you know, after they come out. But at any rate, let's now do the most important thing, which is go behind the curtain on what each guy is doing and get an explanation of, you know, how you approach the market as far as time frames and what your indicators or your software is doing that gives the investor some kind of a edge, in your opinion, on their buy and sell decisions. So let's start out with Mark. And Mark, again, maybe you could give a little bit of an indication of, you know, what you're doing to try to figure out when to buy and sell.
Sure. I just wanted to add something that I think your listeners would find interesting. One metric that I look at that a lot of people overlook is I look at short covering. And last week, there was a tremendous capitulation in short traders. There was $2.09 billion worth of short stock covered on Apple, $1.3 billion on restaurant brands, Alibaba, $1.21 billion, Google, almost a billion, Microsoft, almost a billion, Amazon, three quarters of a billion, Target, $500 million, Estee Lauder, $500 million, Dominion.
So with that, just real quick to interject, if you have that kind of short covering and no follow through, like Bob is down $5 today, is it telling us that there's no volume on the buy side behind that short covering? Or is it telling you that those people have discovered that there's much higher prices coming and they don't want to be short anymore?
Yeah, I think, you know, that kind of money are obviously, these are not commercial traders covering. This is big money covering. I mean, $2 billion worth of short covering in Apple.
But somebody's selling that as well, right? In other words, if you're going to be covering, meaning buying that, somebody's got to be fading that in order to make a deal. Now, the question is the guy who faded all that volume, is he the sharp guy or is the guy covering the short positions?
Well, what this metric does is it looks at the fact that Apple is being the short coverings in blocks. And it doesn't tell you the time period over which it took place, except it did take place last week. So I don't think it's going to tell you what's going to happen. Listen, these aren't micro caps, so mm-hmm. you're not going to get a huge pop. But I think it tells you that what big money is thinking is that, you know, these stocks are all going to go higher over the long haul, mm-hmm. and they look to bail on their short positions. So I just think it. You know, in determining whether you want to go long or short, because I'm really going back to your last question, I think it's really a good metric to look at is, you know, what is the big money doing in the bigger cap stocks? You know, not the small biotechs, and you know, not even the small caps. And there, and listen, you're looking at almost, $10 billion worth of short covering. So there's a lot of big money out there gaming, with a sentiment that the market's going to move higher. So right. You know, that's it. Listen, it's just another number, but when you put it in with all the others, I think it tends to, you know, lead me to believe that.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying it's a positive indicator, but what it doesn't tell you is that earnings next month come in and short of what they expect, and all of a sudden the whole mood changes. So it tells you a little bit about what's going on, what their thought process might be now, but it doesn't obviously able to discount future unknown events, that kind of thing.
Well, let me just say, Ed, I think that they're anticipating good earnings. And remember, if you're an insider and you buy a huge amount of stock, you have to file off Form 4 or whatever that is, and make it, you have to make it public. But if you cover a short position, you don't have to make that public.
Right.
So, you know, these could be big insider short covering positions. So,
Obviously, like I say, your point is that it's a positive at the end of the day. And so about your system at Right Line Trading though? What's the mechanics behind it? And, what kind of time frames do you kind of work with? Are you a day trading? Are you doing swing trading, or, you know, exactly what time frames? And again, what does your software kind of indicate to people as far as, you know, buying and selling?
Okay. Well, every morning I day trade, you know, I day trade four markets: gold, crude, the E-mini, and the Nasdaq. And but then I have an options alert newsletter where I swing trade and usually take positions that are between 30 days and 90 days out. And I have one position that's a year and a half out, that's totally on fundamentals. Out of the last seven options trades, I've had six winners. I just had my first loser on Friday. Abbott Laboratories just went sideways for 45 days, and the spread, expired worthless. But for the short term, I trade a Unirenco bar. So I just trade a 2 or 4 Unirenco. For the swing, I look at a 30 Unirenco. And a 30 Unirenco, say on the E-mini, will go back almost 2 weeks. And some of the more volatile, it'll interim, it, instruments, maybe it'll go back 10 days. And I think there's a couple of key elements in the platform that I use that are really important. One is every indicator does a multi-time frame analysis. And we do not look at any data from the trading chart, because in mathematical modeling, if you do, it turns an independent variable into a dependent one. I mean, you don't care what price on your trading chart is doing. You only care what price on your two higher time frames are doing. So nothing looks at price on the trading chart. And we look at money flow via correlative markets. Like in the E-mini, we want to know what's happening with the Dow, Russell, and NASDAQ. And we project that in what's called our quant line. On momentum, we use a Laguerre. It's based off the two higher time frames. So it's a multi-time frame analysis, and it has nothing to do with what price does on the trading chart. And then for momentum, you also do, it's the one indicator I feel is important. You have to have momentum on your trading chart and on the multi-time frame analysis. And then we look at the multi-time frame direction of the instrument that you're trading. So, and here's the thesis that I have. Multi-time frame alignments only occur when institutional money is at play. And because the most important indicator that we have, and the one, it's the sweet spot, because your win percentage is sensitivity over specificity times prevalence. And when is the market most like, where is the sweet spot to trade, where the likelihood of getting a winner is most prevalent? And it's most prevalent when you're in a multi-time frame trend of the market you're trading. So like, I only trade when I have a multi-time frame alignment long on the
Time frames? Are we talking about days or weeks or months, or what are your multi-time frames?
Well, on a 30 Unirenco, we look at higher fibs. We look at the 144 range, and we look at the next higher fib, which is 89 plus 144. So we're looking at the 144 range, and then the next higher fib, and those two, the 50 and the 15, and it also looks at price. This price has to be above both for a long and below both for a short. And like the 15 has to have crossed the 50 on both higher time frames to give you the color background you want for the sweet spot. And I'll tell you, when we have green background, price almost always rises. And when we have dark pink, it almost always falls, because you've got that 15 below the 50 on the both higher time frames. They're right, both sloping to the downside. And it's a good time to trade.
All right. At the end of the broadcast, again, like I say, we're definitely going to be telling people how to get a hold of you and go through this in more great detail, because it seems like obviously there's a lot to go over. And in this short time frame, we can't go over everything. So very interesting approach there, no doubt, and worth definitely looking into. Next is going to be Norm. Norm, again, what type of techniques and things are you looking at to kind of discover when to buy and sell?
I want to thank Mark for the refresher course on the Fib numbers and so on, because that was impressive, really, that analysis. And, you know, the great thing about this market is that you can, you know, there's so many different ways of looking at it. And most people have streaks one way or the other and the other. And, you know, it really is a long-term stick with it kind of a business. I look at things much more simply. You know, I used to get a lot more complicated, but I have a site called simpletradingplans.com, which is just all about a couple of indicators that seem to be highly sensitive to certain markets, and going with that, I am a believer that the price that we're seeing right now is a culmination of all the current news and what is in the foreseeable future, which is a little bit different time frame for different markets. But suffice it to say that I do believe that the price that people are buying and selling at the moment has already considered pretty much everything. Now, enough for me, and the systems that I trade, that I teach, and so on, are revolve around, again, simplicity, and revolve against keeping the losses very small and allowing a reasonable or extended win. So I don't care, you know, there are many times I've had some very successful programs that were 50-50 winners to losers. But of course, the losers were, you know, infinitely smaller than the winners. I like systems that leave the big move available. I'm going to just show you one one right now, and there's two markets that I wanted to talk about other than this, and I'll save later when we go through other markets. But a lot, when I play tennis, everybody's always asking me. They don't ask me what stocks or what. They used to ask me what a good marijuana stock is. Now they're asking me Bitcoin, because Bitcoin's come down just broke the 10,000 level today. And but in looking at the there's something called Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. You guys know it, but a lot of people out there don't know it. This is a way that you can buy and sell shares like a stock. You're buying and selling shares of the trust, and it mimics the price of Bitcoin very closely. And I think you've got to trust it yourself, so watch it on a day-to-day basis before doing anything. But this GBTC, G is in girl, B is in boy, T is in Tom, C is in cat, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. I'm looking at a gigantic pennant or flag. It's a flag that extends all the way from July to current. And now we're getting very small ranges. It looks like we want to break out one way or the other. So here is an opportunity for somebody who looks at the market simply to take a position on a breakout or breakdown and have a very short stop. And I will caution you one thing. Formations like this tend to break out one way and then reverse and go the other way. So be careful here, because they happen more than you would like to see them happen. But if you want to take a look at an interesting chart that involves Bitcoin, then try the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. It's got a beautiful formation that's ready to break one way or the other.
Yeah, the 50-day average is 13 and change, and the 200-day average is $8.50 and change. So they are inverted to the upside. I guess the only question is are we going to close into that gap between 850 and 12, or is this kind of just going to dip underneath the 50-day and then go back up?
That's the question.
Yeah. And were you looking at this thing from the long side or the short side, or are you looking for a particular breakout, and what kind of points would be interesting to you on either direction if this wedge is going
to
move?
If you read the book on this, I think they tell you that these kinds of formations usually break to the upside, but I think that the jury is out really here. There's a bit of accumulation between 9,000 and 12,000, or I'm sorry, 9 and 12 in this Grayscale Bitcoin trust. So, again, I'm just looking at this flag formation, and I'm going to let the market tell me where it's going to break, but I'm also going to be cool, because there could be a lot of continuation with an accumulation this wide. So I'm not afraid to get in a little bit later than a little bit early, but again, you don't want to get in so late that you miss the move, but I will, or that you create a large risk. I will say this, though. One of my basic rules for long-term success is you're always invest much less than your capacity to be involved. And I think if you do that, that can keep your psyche under control. And even if you're wrong about something, you're not going to take a punch to the solar plexus. So whatever I do here is going to be considerably less than what I could do, as I do with all my trades. And I'd rather have multiple possibilities in multiple markets and have the possibility for those long runs and take small positions than putting all my eggs in one basket.
Yeah, moderation is a big soother of the nerves, I think, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And as far as this thing is concerned, the Bank of England's governor did a dissertation on digital currency at the Jackson Hole meeting. And the more, sanctions and all kinds of stuff is being put on people, settlements in U.S. dollars may lose its popularity over time. And some kind of a digital settlement of payments is not off the charts, I don't think, at all. So I think it'd be decent to keep an eye on this thing for sure.
Just a last word on this. About 5 years ago, I was in a futurist think tank. It was Singularity University. Singularity meaning that robots you won't be able to tell the difference between a human and a robot. And that's what the world will eventually get to, and some people think. In any event, they had a guy named Ray Kurzweil. That was the only two people speaking. Ray Kurzweil and Peter Diamandis. I won't describe who Peter is right now, but he's a high-end guy. And so is, I think Gates called Kurzweil the smartest guy in the world. He's a gene splicer, and I mean, the guy's nuts. They talked up there, and this was a two-day conference. The guy on the right was was the head of new products for Microsoft, the guy, I don't know how I got in this room, but they were heavyweights listening for 2 days to these two guys. And Kurzweil talked about Bitcoin at that time, 5 or 6 years ago. And he just came out and said, it's here to stay. It's a concept and something that will be, of course, resisted in the beginning, and then will have legs. He was convinced it's something that you have to take seriously and will be the future. So, I mean, I heard it from him, and I'm kind of watched all the resistance till now, as you've just described. I think he may be right about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Okay, right now we're going to turn over to Michael Guest. Michael's been very patient hearing the other speakers, and definitely want to hear what Michael's got to say, because for day trading and short-term trading, he definitely has something of interest. So, Michael, kind of explain a little bit about how your stuff works and how people benefit from it.
Sure, thank you. Well, I heard a lot of hedging going on today, and that's really part and parcel of position trading. You know, nobody has a crystal ball, but it's an axiom of trading that the shorter the time frame, the easier to have a higher degree of confidence about the outcome. So it goes without saying that when we're looking at a week, a month, a year, or whatever it is out there, then your probabilities start getting a little vaguer. So wouldn't it be nice if you didn't have that, if you had upwards of 87% or higher accuracy, and this has been benchmarked and proven with the TradeSafe system? These are my students actually taking their own trades, not some hypothetical backtesting thing that's curve-fitted or over-optimized. These are actual people from all walks of life going through a pre-formatted course. They're in a coaching room. I call it a coaching room instead of a trading room, because I deliberately take losing trades. You may say, why would you do that? Because I'm trying to use it as a teaching opportunity. Instead of just showing off and looking good and picking winners and hiding losers, you want people to know what to do with that information. It's just data. So I give pre-formatted journals in digital form that my students complete after each and every trade, so that they accumulate a reliable body of knowledge about how and why this TradeSafe mechanical trading system really works for them, so that when they finally reach advanced status and go into benchmarking, a statistically viable sample of at least 30 trades, they're going to come out with at least 85-87% accuracy win loss. And that was 100% of my graduates from 2018. So I believe that it is possible to day trade, even on a part-time basis, even if you have a job. Now, a lot of people are going to say, oh, I don't think so. That's why I invite people to do just two things. Number one, go to daytradesafe.com/replay and watch the replay of a recent presentation I've done that goes into much more detail than I can here. And of course, you get to see the actual charts. And of course, you will also get a link to scheduling time with me, because people want to ask questions. And I'm one of the very few people in the industry where people can actually get all their questions answered without talking to a sales guy. No arm twisting, no pressure. It doesn't work. And this way you can come away feeling like you were respected. And then you can say, okay, I know if this is for me or not. And I'll support you on that. So go to daytradesafe.com/replay. You'll learn a lot more about how this system works and whether it's really right for you.
Yeah, I definitely agree that people have got to go to the websites, find out as much as you can about what the guys are offering, and then see if and when it could be incorporated into your situation, if it's appropriate for you or not. But I think all three speakers clearly have got mechanisms to try to figure out the buy and sell points. And I think all three are also very cognizant of risk management, which means, you know, don't overdo it as far as the trading, and don't overdo it on one position, because if that position doesn't pan out, you don't want to have a drawdown in your reserves where you can't play the game any longer. So, and of course, with Norm, he does have a situation where he's trying to help people with the psychological points. Of course, the mechanisms and the software from Mark and Michael also give you a help on a discipline on getting in and getting out. And then, of course, what type of position you put on, the size is very important. So all three guys have got a lot to bring to the table here. Okay, well, right now, what I'd like to do is just go around around the horn again and basically ask you guys to let people know exactly how they can get a hold of you, and if there's any special offers or if there's any special situation that you'd like to bring to their attention, this would be a great time to do it. So let's go back to Mark. And Mark, again, just reintroduce yourself and again the website and how people can get a hold of you, and then of course any special deals you got.
Can I just take 60 seconds to just add a little bit of information?
Sure, we got a 60. Yep.
Okay. My feeling is that, you know, why do 95% of day traders fail? The reason is because when the market first evolved into a system where people, guys at home, people at home began to trade it, maybe in the 60s, the power of every buyer was essentially equivalent to the power of every seller. I mean, institutional money, algorithmic trading, bank trading was not a factor. So, you know, Elliot couldn't have been a moron when he made Elliott Wave. But if you try to trade it now, you'll get crushed. Gann couldn't, these guys are brilliant mathematicians, but their stuff fails because of the intervention of big money that takes a closed system and skews everything and twists up everything. And there are a lot of right ways to do things. I'm never dogmatic, and I believe that there's a ton of people who do it, what they do really well. But I also believe, and I love Japanese candlestick patterns, but I think they're much weaker now because institutional money will come in and they'll just, totally demolish everything. So the only thing that you can do is to trade proxies of money flow. The only thing you can do is step in as one quarter step behind big money. And that's how you're going to make, and that's how you're going to make it. And that's what we try to do. And I personally think that's the safest way to trade. And I'm at www.rightlinetrading.com. If you go to the website, you can come to the room. I think it's like $2 and we give you a trial. I trade live. I call the trades out in advance. I know that everyone in the room, I'm not going to say wants to make money because we're an educational service, but I am going to say I've got 150 traders and they want to be successful. I review all the trades at the end. I put up my back end of my NinjaTrader. I take everything with ChartTrader up. My stops and targets are projected. The profit loss from every trade I make is projected. You know, when I have a bad day, it's like right out there and I got a bump on my head the size of a log, and I deal with it. And I want to take 10 seconds to say that I really believe that what Norm does is really very important. Like the reason I take that purple pill every night and like my stomach is always like in a knot is because it's a very difficult emotional thing to deal with when your money is on the line. You have this tremendous tendency to act in a counterproductive way and to learn to overcome the emotional, and I say this with all seriousness, not to be patronizing to Norm, but because I believe this from the bottom of my heart. In order to become a successful trader, you have to overcome the emotional component of it. No matter how great your entries are, your post-entry money management is based on your emotions, and you've got to control them in order to milk your winners, cut your losers short. It's a very, very hard thing to master.
There's no question about it. And so make sure everyone who would like to get more information from Mark Sachs, write that down. rightlinetrading.com and take a look at what's going on and then take it from there. For those who don't want to take a pill to go to sleep, Norm, what do you got for them?
No, it's not to go to sleep. It's with stomach acid.
I got melatonin for you.
I got melatonin.
Melatonin. Grow up.
The Discipline Trader apothecary.com. Actually, the DisciplineTrader.com, if you want to get started and get on the fast track quickly, I mean, it's a 14-day free trial, and you can just take a look at all the assets what we have. We specialize in 7-minute subconscious training where you close your eyes, you relax, and put the right kinds of behavioral thoughts in your mind in order to create neural pathways that will override some of the behaviors that are holding you back. But a 2-week free trial, and after that, I call it semi-free, $49 a month, and you stay as long as you want, no contract. So if you've got an issue with the mental, you can't pull the trigger without hesitation, fear of losing, you can't, you seem to move your stops around because somehow it doesn't feel good for you as a person if you take a loss, if you start mixing your ego. All of those things are approached at thedisciplinetrader.com. So give it a shot. But I want to ask Mark something because there are plenty of guys out there that follow the big money, but you are a very detailed version of that. So I want to ask you this question. Recently, I had heard Bertie told me that recent silver move from about 14 all the way to almost $20 was a bunch of big money buying, kind of behind the scenes. Did you get any sense of that in the work that you do when that was going on a couple of months ago?
Absolutely. I have a silver spread in my options portfolio. So that, so help me God, it is up a ton. Today, silver is up about $2.25 on the options position I have. It is rocking. So I totally agree. And you know how I saw it? There were tons of buyers of all the silver miners. It was a big silver. It was a silver rush, not a gold rush. So I can tell you the position. I don't want to run over time. I can tell you the position that I have. I just wanted to give, and I don't want to take up your time. I don't want to step on anyone's toes or be disrespectful. I'll just tell you what I bought.
I tell you what we could do. What we could do, Mark, is the people that are listening, because we're coming down into the end of the broadcast, and okay. I wanted definitely to have Michael, guest, have enough time to go over what he's doing.
Sure.
There's a lot of stuff to cover. Norm at thedisciplinetrader.com and Mark at rightlinetrading.com. You know, in this kind of a format, we could go on all day because there's so much to talk about. But let's give Michael a shot here to explain how the day trading at daytradesafe.com will work, and if he has any special offers for people today.
Thank you. As they say, brevity is the soul of wit. First of all, folks, I'll just repeat the website, daytradesafe.com. And when you get there, there'll be a chance to opt in. You will have an offering of a free ebook. It will give you chart settings for some of the most commonly traded markets, the minis, so that you'll know exactly the same settings that we use in our own system, and you can play with them. It'll also show you how to determine whether you should be scalping or scaling, because if you're day trading, you don't realize that one size fits all does not work. If all you do is scalp, 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 you're leaving money on the table. Sometimes if you scale out, you stuck your neck out too far, and scalping would have made you better money. I will actually show you how in our system, and I have to wait for the system to shut up so I can talk. I will show you how in our system, the rules that we are very specific about will tell you whether you should scalp, whether you should scale out. Now that's the free ebook, but to really give you a deep dive into how the system works, you truly will want to watch the replay that I mentioned earlier, daytradesafe.com/replay. And that will give you all the detail you want. Also included in that replay will be a link so you can schedule time with me and you can visit with me and get all your questions answered. For anyone that watches that replay, you will get a substantial discount. We're talking well over $1,500 discount if you decide to go with TradeSafe.
And when people do get the system, they're going to hear the machine talking about breakout and all that kind of stuff too.
In the replay, you'll even get a chance to hear it. But yes, in the system, you get audible and visual alerts about any change of trend on any chart in any market that you have loaded. This is a 95% fully automated system. You still have to pull the trigger because I don't believe in giving up total control and trying to go out and play golf. I did that once upon a time, and unfortunately, the internet went down, and I had no way to protect myself. So I want to be there and be in control. Besides, I'm still old school enough to believe that computers haven't totally taken over yet. Context is something that you really should factor into your trades. Things like support resistance, is the Fed going to meet, for example, and so on. I can go into more details about that in that presentation.
Sure. Well, I think that's great, and I think everybody's got something something to offer here. So all the listeners should definitely try to write down the different emails, Norm Hallett, thedisciplinetrader.com, and Mark Sachs and Michael Guess. David's going to wrap it up here and repeat their email addresses. I'm Jim Kinney of optionprofessor.com. If you have any questions on what I'm looking at right now, simply send an email to optionprofessor@gmail.com. David, back to you to shut it, to close it up.
All right. Thanks, guys. Lots of great info today. So,
hey David.
Yeah.
Can I interrupt you for 1 second?
Sure.
I want to give your listeners the best hot stock to buy.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. It's really a unique opportunity. I'm telling you, it's a killer. And I never throw these out like this, but it's called Innovative Industrial Properties.
Come on, you're killing me. Come on.
It's IIPR, and it's a REIT, and it only accumulates properties that have cannabis, either factories or plants or whatever. It's at a wonderful buy price, and I have a really heavy duty position in it.
What did you say? IICR?
IIPR.
Okay.
I think it's $150 stock that's right now at 90. But it's volatile. You're going to have to hang in there with it. But 6 months from now, 8 months from now, I think you're going to be very handsomely rewarded.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, I own some of the MJ one myself, but I haven't seen that one. But yeah, I'll look that up.
Okay.
Cool. So, all right. Thanks, guys. And just a reminder to everyone, be sure to join us tomorrow for the 95th episode of Analyze Your Trade. Mike Bassani and Jim Kinney will be on that one. And just want to thank that'll be at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and you go to timingresearch.com/live to get access to the live recording of that event. And just want to thank my guests again for today, Norman Hallett of thedisciplinetrader.com, Mark Sachs of rightlinetrading.com, Michael Guess of daytradesafe.com, and Jim Kinney of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
Hey, great job, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.